The bag is packed with the sticks. The drinks are cold. And the scorecards ready to go. Time to hit the links.
I am completely at the mercy of you, well, which is so cool to me in golf.
Yeah, you're hoping that you don't have to take the club out of your hand if I go OB and we're back on the tee.
This is On the Tee, presented by Wisconsin Golf Trips.
I mean, there's nobody saved that team.
No, it's Tiger effing Woods.
Yeah. Again, and the closest you can get.
They might need a name.
Broadcasting live from Erin Hills Golf Course, alongside Bally Sports' Stephen Watson, here's Gabe Neitzel.
That's right. We are at one of our favorite places in Wisconsin, Erin Hills. And there's a reason we are at Erin Hills today, because, Stephen, not only is this one of our favorite places.
It's our happy place. We can just call it what it is.
Well, it is our happy place. But you know who else really loves this place?
The
USGA.
This place called the USGA.
Maybe you've heard of it. Julia Pine, who is the Director of Communications here at Erin Hills with us. Exciting announcement today, Julia. What was announced right here at Erin Hills earlier today?
Yeah, we're thrilled. So obviously in 248 days we have the U.S. Women's Open. People already knew that here.
But who's counting?
Yes, who's counting? But today we announced five more championships, five amateur championships over the next 15 years. So that'll be both four balls, both amateurs, which personally, not that I pick favorites, are my favorite of our USGA events, and the junior amateur. So five more championships, and in total, that will mean that Erin Hills has hosted nine different USGA events. This place isn't that old, so that's really a testament to them that they will have nine different USGA championships.
Another representative of the USGA described this place as a cathedral of golf. Why do you guys love this place so much?
Yeah, so two things really make for a great experience from a USGA championship perspective. First and foremost, the golf course. I mean, these are our national championships. We only take them to the best courses in the country. And so Erin Hills is that. And then secondly, we call it the community, but that's both the community around us and the community here. And as you guys know, this place is great because of the people that are here. So they're true partners for us. I mean, everything through the entire planning stage, they are true partners in every sake of the word.
Julia Pine, Director of Communications from the USGA, joining us here on the tee because the USGA, yeah, that's right, coming back for five more championships here at Erin Hills, and that's not including the one, as she mentioned, 248 days away, the 80th U.S. Women's Open. Why are the amateur events some of your favorites? Because, I mean, the Mid-Am was out here. That was fantastic, and I agree with you. A lot of these amateur events can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we see the professionals play week in and week out, and there's just something about the uniqueness of a USGA amateur championship that until you've been to one, I'm not sure you can really wrap your head around what that experience is like. And I should say been to one or watched it on TV. First of all, match play is special. There's something about match play that's so unique. You can watch two people play in a match. You could have never heard of them before. They may be two people in the junior amateur that one day are going to go on to win majors. So you're going to want to know their name. But right away, you watch a match and you're drawn to someone. It's that head-to-head competition that you don't get, you know, when someone is playing the golf course. And then the experience for a fan at a USGA Amateur Championship, there's no ropes. So you are up close and personal walking the fairways. I mean, when you tune into the US Amateur, you see that. There's this image in my head that I'll never forget from last year. I wasn't there still at the US Amateur, but Neil Shipley hits this shot, and he's walking through, you know, hundreds, maybe 1,000 people in the fairway as he's approaching the green where his ball is like 1 foot away and he's going to win the match. He's just high-fiving everyone in the middle of the fairway. You don't see that in golf very much, so it's just so unique. And the last thing I'll say is that you are seeing people at the precipice of their career. So I think what's so special about a USGA championship is we touch someone's career at all of the highest levels, junior, amateur, the opens, and then the seniors, the senior opens. So, you know, we knew Scottie Scheffler when he was a junior. We knew Rose Zhang. I mean, Rose developed into Rose at the US Women's Amateur mm-hmm. and the Girls Junior, and then she'll be here at the Women's Open. So it's just a special part of someone's career.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the names back to 2011 when the U.S. Amateur was here at Erin Hills. It was won by Kelly Kraft, but it was Patrick Cantlay who he beat. It was Jordan Spieth who lost in one of those final rounds as well. You mentioned their blossoming careers. Now, the four ball in particular is something that most golfers know what that is, because if you're playing at a club, you're playing match play, that's what we're used to playing as a two-team event. explain the dynamics of how that works in those particular events for the men's and women's.
Yeah, so before the Adaptive Open and the Senior Women's Open, the four balls were our newest championships. They just had their eighth year. So for us, that's infancy because we're at the 125th U.S. Open next year. But the four balls are really special because you get to see a team dynamic that you don't see outside of, you know, a Curtis Cup or Walker Cup, and those are so far and few between. So four ball is what it is. There's four balls. You know, when you're with your buddies, you're either playing four ball or four sums. You would call it alternate shot. But four ball is your own ball, but you get to rely on your partner. So there's just a different strategy there. I mean, if your partner is, you know, very much going to make par, you can really go for it, right? Or if you're completely out of the hole, your partner knows they need to play more conservatively. So you see a different kind of golf from still top level amateurs. I mean, the same guys, there's a group we called the Drews, Drew Kittleson and his partner, but he is in the mid-am right now. So these are the same people that are playing at the top levels of the game. They're just partnering up. So the four balls are really fun, and we're excited to bring them here. They've never been to the state of Wisconsin before.
Oh, well, I mean, it was about time. I mean, it's 8 years. I mean, what took you so long, right? I mean, years in?
Here's the real curveball. The women's amateur is turning 125 next year. It will be the first time it comes to the state of Wisconsin. And you guys know how much we love Wisconsin, so it's a little bit of a surprise.
Okay, I got to talk about this because as happy as I am to have all these championships, I mean, you guys are kind of pushing the secret out. Like, we like that we have this underrated, incredible golf. We don't need the world to come here anymore.
I think Mike Wan did that last summer at the Senior Open when during the prize presentation, during the trophy ceremony of the Senior Open, he said, all right, Century World, the secret's out. You've got a great golf course here. So we haven't only done that to Century World. We've done that to the whole state.
I just want to put this out there. The next 15 years, yes, we're at Erin Hills, which is going to host six over the next 15 years. In addition to that, there's going to be four at Sand Valley. There's going to be three at Whistling Straits. So that's 13 events in the next 15 years the USGA has chosen to host here in Wisconsin. I mean, Gabe and I love it because we get to talk about these courses and these championships. For fans that are listening out there, the opportunity to come and witness some of these events. I mean, you mentioned that Wisconsin has great fans, but why these events in particular? Why do you think these will be a good draw for fans?
Yeah, I think it's the variety of what we're bringing as well. I mean, who comes to a women's open is not who comes to a U.S. amateur. So bringing, you know, five, six events here, you're going to get a different clientele for some of those. I mean, the women's open is a major sporting event in that it generates, you know, event goers come or families come or sports fans come. Whereas the U.S. amateur is like pretty pure golf, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll bring different people out. But I think, you know, the state of Wisconsin and the golf fans here have been so supportive to us, and the golf courses are really good. Just people, like you said, might not have known that.
This just in.
Yeah, that's the thing I can't wrap my head around. As we talked with Julia Pine, Director of Communications from the USGA, again, making the announcement today, five more USGA championships coming to Erin Hills. But as Stephen points out, 13 and 15 years in the state of Wisconsin, I mean, what is it? I mean, not just about the fans, but how did Wisconsin get so good at the golf courses that it's drawing the USGA?
I don't know. We don't live here, so we don't know. It might be the cheese curds or the spotted cow. But, yeah, no, I mean, you know, John Bodenhammer was here earlier today, obviously on a flight out of here right now, or he'd be joining us. But, him and the leadership at the USGA have just built such great relationships here as well. And you probably saw that on display today. It's really genuine. You know, we were here with Jim and Andy, who are, you know, leaders here at Erin Hills, and the relationships that John has built with the folks over at Kohler and Sand Valley and our friends at Century World. I mean, it just happened to be in the same state. I don't think that part's intentional for us, but there's four really great places, and we're not going to let that stop us from coming back a lot.
So I know that you have a list prepared because I asked you to prepare it because I wasn't ready to look it up myself, and this is your job, not mine. But 13 clubs have hosted the U.S. Open, U.S. Women's Amateur, U.S. Amateur, and U.S. Women's Open. Erin Hills now joins that exclusive list. What are some of the other names on that list?
Yeah, so I won't roll them all off because it is a pretty long list. But these are the top of the top courses in the country. So we've got Marion, we've got Oakland Hills, we've got Oakmont, we've got Pebble, we've got Pinehurst, and we've got Shinnecock. So a pretty illustrious list. I left off the country club. So yeah, Erin Hills is in rarefied air there. And like we like to say, those are our four majors. The two opens, the two amateurs, as John Bodenhammer said today in 2020 when we were faced with really difficult choices when we looked at our slate of 15 championships, we canceled all but those four. Those are really important to us. Three of the four have been around for 124 years. The Women's Open we inherited from another organization, and obviously about to hit its 80th year. So those are really special championships, and this is a special place to hold them.
Well, and I'm excited for the Women's Amateur coming here because I'm also excited for next year in the U.S. Women's Open. It feels like, especially in the women's game of golf, you mentioned Rose, but the year that Nelly had. Now Lydia Ko is really, you know, coming on strong at the end of the year. It feels like women's golf is just ready to explode, and I feel like this could be a really good place next year for a really good championship.
I agree, and this is near and dear to my heart. I'm just such a fan of women's sports and women's golf, and then you just see something different, you know, when you come to a women's open. But I agree. You know, something that's really special for us, too, is taking the women's open to U.S. Open venues. For us, those are our two most important championships, and we feel equally about both. And so to bring the women's open somewhere that has hosted a U.S. Open somewhat recently, we were able to do that at Pebble Beach. And the reception we got from fans, they got to watch the women, who they may be less familiar with, play a golf course they are familiar with. And there's something really special about that. To put the women on those stages and those platforms is something that, you know, we talk a lot about. The LPGA certainly talks a lot about. So I think there's a great recipe here for, you know, something special to happen.
What are you hoping the conditions are like in May? Because I know that was a big sticking point for a lot of people outside of the state of Wisconsin or outside of the USGA, just about the setup for the Open was the one thing you can't control, and that's Mother Nature, and it led to some lower scores than I think people were hoping for a U.S. Open. What are you hoping the weather's like here, having seen the property now?
Yeah, so we always say at the heart of it, we want the golf course to play as the architect intended it for it to play. So we're not here to trick anything up. So Mother Nature has a seat at the table. So, you know, that's a part of the equation. But, you know, Shannon Roulard, who sets up the course for the Women's Open, she did a fantastic job at Lancaster this year. You know, you mentioned Nelly had a little bit of trouble on a few of the holes, but one of the holes, really. But, you know, it played as it should play. You know, we're not doing anything different than what the golf course presents. We're just, you know, setting up the challenge. We want it to be hard, but we want it to be fair. And, you know, that's what all the players said coming off the golf course. So I think ultimately that's what we would want here. We want them to feel challenged more so than they do week to week on tour, but we want them to say, like, that was a tough test and I enjoyed it.
But also, it's going to be the purest form of the tough test, because then also announced today, which I thought was really cool, it happened in 2017 before the men. But how rare is it for a golf course to shut down before they have one of your major championships like that? Because Erin Hills, they said today, they are shutting down. They're not going to be open for public play until after the U.S. Women's Open next year.
Very rare. I mean, I can probably count it on one hand, the type of course or the courses that would do something like that for us. But it speaks to how they value and appreciate championship golf, and value and appreciate these players. So when the women come here to play, they want to present the best golf course possible, and so do we. But we also understand that, you know, they're a business, and, you know, they own this place 365 days out of the year. So for them to do that, again, it speaks to why we keep coming back here. They're true partners, and they want what we want, which is to present the best championship possible.
And there has to be just so much excitement coming off the Solheim Cup of where this game stands and where U.S. women's golf stands right now to have the faces here in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to be at Solheim, what was that, a week plus ago, and it pairs really nicely with what we've started at the USJ, which is the U.S. National Development Program. So that's something that we started earlier this year. We have a national junior team for the first time ever, which is a, you know, group of 10 girls and 8 boys who we hope are the future of the game. And American golf has certainly been strong before, but they haven't been supported by a program like that, like kids from Canada or Korea or Switzerland or Australia have. So we're supporting that in a way that has never been done before, and we hope that that means more major championships for American golfers, more Solheim Cups, more Ryder Cups. That's the ultimate goal of what we're doing here.
Julia, thank you so much for the time. Pleasure having you guys here. You know, of course, you guys know. You're welcome back to the state of Wisconsin, whether it's here, Whistling, whether it's Century World, Sand Valley, USGA.
I was going to say, if you need to look into housing, just let Dave and I.
I know. We have Golf House Pinehurst. I don't know when we're going to have a Wisconsin office. I might need it.
Gosh, next 15 years, a little busy here. But we're happy to have you, and thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Gabe and I cannot wait to be back out here in May talking about women's golf and seeing the best in the world take on this course. It's a special place to us and to so many in Wisconsin, and we're glad you guys feel the same.
Thank you guys for what you do.
Julia Pine, the Director of Communications from the USGA, joining us here live at Erin Hills. It was a special day here at Erin Hills. We are going to talk about that next. Of course, you can always join us at Erin Hills, host of the 2025 80th playing of the U.S. Women's Open. Always check out their website at erinhills.com. Our round out here today. We discuss it next on the team. The next best round of golf for you will happen at the Wisconsin Country Club. Hey, make sure you check it out. I'm Gabe Neitzel along with Stephen Watson. We are members out there, and do what we've done. Become members at the Wisconsin Country Club. No assessments, no food and beverage minimums, and a beautiful golf course that's fun and challenging. Tree-lined fairways, greatly groomed greens, and a top 100 teaching pro. Plus, the Wisconsin Country Club has tennis and pickleball courts and pool with themed Sunday fun days every week. Get started today. Visit thewisconsincountryclub.com for membership info. The Wisconsin Country Club, just a fairway away. We are hanging out at Erin Hills today, and I believe the sun somehow...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's just peeking through. First time we've seen it all day.
That's good. Yeah. That's nice to see the sun right now.
Kind of a misty day out here at Erin Hills, but I can't help it, Stephen, and I said this out on the golf course, like even when it's misty and it's not the best weather day, like I walk around this place with just a dumb little grin on my face. I love being out there, love walking this golf course, and we had a fun day today.
Yeah, if you don't notice a little extra pep in Gabe's voice right now, you should have seen this guy golf his ball today. How did that one feel? Can I say the number?
Say the number.
73 from Mr. Gabe Neitzel today at Erin Hills.
Yeah, so
that's
that
a fun sentence to hear, huh?
So that's the 17 strokes better than the last time we were out here earlier this year.
You said that part. I chose to avoid that part.
I think it's worth pointing out. Just shows how strange and funny this game can be sometimes. That is, in relation to par, the best round I have played.
The most fun I've had watching you play the game of golf.
Yeah. We got hot a little bit there today. You know, there's some ups and downs, and, you know, the crazy part is I shoot a 73, and there's still some shots I want back because it could have been a really special day, but it was still...
Because you're one of us.
Yeah, it's just that's the way it goes when you play golf. Correct. But we had a good foursome. It was you, me, Greg Matzik, Vince Vetrano from WTMJ. By the way, the ESPN Milwaukee boys did come out victorious. Because the four ball is coming here, we figured we'd play a little four ball of our own, and when I shoot 73...
Tough for everybody.
Kind of makes it.
I'm glad we were not playing a singles match in light of the amateur. Also.
Yeah, but you know, it was one of those days where everything was working. You have a good swing thought that's kind of working, and you ride that the best you can. And it always helps when you have literally the best caddy on property.
Yeah.
Carrying your bag.
Shout out to our guy Julius. He caddied for us when we were out here earlier for our live remote back in May for. Being out here, Erin Hills, who's been a longtime supporter of this show and it means the world to us, and we're so excited for what they're hosting. And Julius was on our bag then. He witnessed both of us that day. We did a fun segment with him that day of, all right, we'll both interview you about the other person.
Yeah.
And how can we get better? Where do we need to go? And Julius laid it out there, and I think his big thing for you was avoiding the big misses.
Yeah.
And that's, you were driving the heck out of your golf ball today. And I've told anybody who cares to listen about our golf games, when you have your driver going, there is no number that is too low for you.
What was crazy about today is anytime you make a two on number three, or a number nine here, make a two on that hole, make a birdie on that hole, chances are there's not going to be a better hole that you play. Like, it's a very tough hole. I was the only one that hit the green, and both Greg and Vince were in bunkers. It's such a hard hole.
Yeah.
You know, colloquially, everybody, shortest par five. Because, again, you don't hit the green. It's a tough up and down. It is a tough bogey a lot of times.
Yeah.
If
add
you
in
miss that green.
15 yards worth of wind and a mist in your face as well. And the elements made it even more challenging.
So made a two on that hole, but that was not the only two. That wasn't the best two of the day.
No.
It wasn't the best two
sure
of the
wasn't.
Day.
Sure wasn't.
And so we got to the 11th tee box today, and... You know, we're playing back on the green tees. We were playing the green-white combos today. And we're on the green tee, and Julius tells you, hey, you hit your two iron out there. It'll be perfect. You can be more aggressive. A lot of, fairway on the right. And he goes, Gabe, he hands me my three iron. And I looked at him, I go, what's the carry of the bunkers on the left? And he's like, ooh. And you kind of see like, oh, I see what you're doing.
I hear you clucking, big chicken.
Yeah, and he kind of got into it. So I'm like, all right, this isn't a terrible idea. I just wanted to know. So he looked at it, and it was downwind. He's like, it's like a 300 carry over those bunkers. All right, so we take out the driver. And unbeknownst to me, somebody in the group was doubting this strategic play.
Okay, I've golfed with you enough.
Yep.
I've golfed with you on this property enough. Mm-hmm. To know that as good as you can play for a long stretch, mm-hmm. I've seen your wheels come off quickly.
It happened here last year.
And it happens with the big stick.
Yeah.
So I loved the fact that Julius mm-hmm. was having you lay up and just keep hitting greens. Keep
yep.
hitting greens. Because you know if you miss a fairway out here, the fescue does not care.
Correct.
So Gabe is, I kid you not, in his backswing of his drive, and I whisper in the ear of Greg Matzik, I hate this decision for Gabe. Because as your friend, co-host, yep. mm-hmm. supporter of said golf game, I wanted the best for you.
Partner in the game today?
Yeah, that's true. I guess I'm not used to being your partner.
Yeah, that's fair.
I hated it for you.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to see the wheels come off. Well, and what did you do? You hit the best drive. We've been golfing together for 5+ years.
Yeah.
We've probably played tens of, close to 100 rounds of golf together. And that was the best drive I've ever seen you hit.
I think it might be one of the best drives I've ever hit. Yeah. Yeah.
Given the spot that you needed to land your golf ball over the bunker on the left to hit the slot to take you to the green, I don't think I could drop my ball where you hit your ball. It was incredible.
Yeah. So ended up driving the green on 11. As good as the drive was, the putt might have been better.
Yeah. Shout out to Julius there.
Again, but when
my man didn't
miss
a read.
When you've got the best caddy out here, who's been out here since day one, this guy probably knows reads on greens that don't even exist out here anymore. And we ended up making it 2 on a par 4 today.
Yeah, a big fist pump out of you. You were fired up, and we all were fired up. But there was a true Tiger-like. I wish I had a freeze frame of you fist in the air with that.
Again, it was, how far was the putt? Like 35
yeah.
feet, something like that? And you don't drive greens on par fours all that often. So then when you cash in a long putt on top of it, and to do it out here, it's something special. Something special.
It just felt like today was your day. And the wheels got away from you a little bit, a couple holes later on 14.
Yeah.
So. 14 and I, we can both probably flush that one from our memory banks.
Mm-hmm.
We played it very differently and made the same 7. But, mine was 5 strokes within 60 yards. Yours
was... a lot of strokes a long ways away from the green.
Yeah, but all roads led to a 7. But let's forget about that. I have to describe a scene that you have no idea what I'm about to describe
okay.
to everybody listening. So I've detailed on this show, when Gabe's not playing well, he
mm-hmm.
tends to walk by himself.
Yep.
He's trying to get in the right mental space. He's just trying to go through his process. When Gabe's playing really well, and I don't think I've ever seen you like this.
Okay.
We're on the tee box at 17.
Yeah.
At this point, I know
yeah.
that Gabe is even par
yep.
on the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, let's just get home.
Yeah.
Par, par, finish.
I was thinking the same thing. Honestly, you know what I was thinking? All right, par here, and then going into a par 5, maybe something special happens.
So Gabe is, I believe you led off because we were coming off of 16. I made a birdie on 16 to get back that stroke that you gave up on the double. So you're mm-hmm. back to even. You birdie the par 3 16th. You hit your tee shot. It was a little left, but Julius was not worried about it. Do you remember what you were like after that?
No.
Gabe Neitzel was like, if you've been to the zoo and you see one of the caged big cats that are just pacing around the window side to side.
Yeah.
That was what Gabe was doing behind us on the tee box. He was like watching because he was engaged in the group. Between every shot, he put his head down and he was walking side to side. You looked like a tiger in a cage that just wanted to break loose.
Yeah.
And I could tell I was dying on the inside because I was like, man, he wants this so bad. And we all wanted it for you.
Yeah.
But in that moment, just watching you pace side to side.
So it's funny.
Side to side. I could tell that your wheels were turning every which way of how can I finish this par.
So funny you should mention that. Unfortunately, had a three putt there. Put it on the front of the green, and that was pin on 17 all the way back. Long putt, didn't get it nearly close enough. But funny you should mention that. So back in the beginning of August, when I was playing in the member guest and we were in the shootout, me and my partner in Madison. After the round, I was in the bar talking with some of the people, and one of the guys I had kind of gotten to know a little bit through our group earlier in the week had come over and goes, "Man, you must have been really nervous. Why would you say that?" He goes, "Because every time you weren't hitting a shot, because he was alt shot, like you were just taking laps around the green."
Yeah.
Like, so I was just
pacing. This is a hard enough walk as it is, and I think Gabe added an extra few thousand steps just walking around his tee box.
That's what I do. I get this. I don't know if it's because it wasn't a nervousness, because I was playing well. Like in the two shots I hit, I three putted, seven. It happens. Like I felt like I was swinging well. It's just you have this energy, and I'm a pacer.
No, it was definitely not a negative energy. Yeah. It was an energy of anticipation.
Yeah.
Like I watch enough professional golf to know guys' ticks, right? So Justin Thomas is a guy whose tick, he plays with his collar like crazy. Yeah. When he's locked in to a big hole or a big shot, he just lifts his collar. For you, it was just back and forth, back and forth. And it was like, head up, nice shot, Greg, back and forth. It was really interesting to watch.
Yeah, so
and Julius and I had a good laugh about it because I was like, Gabe wants this so bad.
Well, so again, I've never broken par. I've never shot even par. Not something I've ever done.
So to do it on this here, property.
That's what I'm saying. So to walk into 17 and be at even par and be like, this is a real possibility. Like not only could you be even par, but with 18 on a par five, you can make something happen. And unfortunately it didn't happen today for me, but it still ended up being a great round. It was the round of the year for me.
Yeah, I honestly, for me, 72 versus 73 did not change. It was special to witness you golf your ball like that. 9 and 11, the way you played those two holes against the elements and with the elements, mm-hmm. was fun, man. It's fun. I always tell people, like, when you have that driver going, you make the game look easy.
It's different. It just becomes different because if I'm in play, it's a lot of wedges.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the closest thing to when you see Bryson, he's never out of a hole because he hits the ball so far. He just can become a good scrambler. And you didn't even need to scramble a lot today.
No.
In some spots you did.
Yeah, a couple of spots you had to get up and down, but it was a really fun day. And the fact that we had the group that we did, the caddies that we did, ended up being a really special day, which is why we always tell you, if you have the opportunity, again, we understand how fortunate we are to come out here and play in on days like today. If you have the opportunity, I cannot recommend this experience enough.
Because as you brought up at the beginning, you still smiled through a 90.
Yeah.
And you smiled through a 73.
Yeah, it had a little different energy apparently for the 73 on the 17th hole.
Yeah, but it in a fun way.
Yeah,
a fun way.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, this walk is unlike anything in that I've experienced so far in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, we talk about these courses, and we detailed it in the last segment with Julie. Like, you could pick your favorite kid out here, mm-hmm. when you have golf experiences in this state. Find the way to make these experiences happen for yourself, because it's an experience you will not ever forget. And if you do it with the right people, which is half the battle, it's truly better than any sporting experience you could imagine. And that's what I always tell people when they see some of these greens fee prices. And I say, how much would you pay to go to a Bucks playoff game, mm-hmm. a Brewers playoff game? You can do that out here.
Yeah.
Look, and it's a five-hour experience that you'll never forget.
First thing I'm going to say, if you haven't been out here, come out for the U.S. Women's Open.
Yeah.
Come out in May. It's late May. I believe the Sunday of the tournament is June 1st. So it's going to be fantastic next year. See the property and then come out and play it.
Yeah, and because a lot of people don't think they're good enough golfers to mm-hmm. play here, which is totally understandable. Oh. It is a U.S. Open course for a reason. So to your point, come watch the best in the world do it and get to walk this property, because it really you can't believe that this is 45 minutes away from Milwaukee.
Well, yeah, and that's and no offense to our foursome today, because I loved our foursome today, and this was probably the my second favorite round out here. My favorite round out here I've ever played is with my parents.
Yeah.
And both of them, they don't play a ton of golf. You know, they try to when they can, and they're not, you know, spectacular golfers. They came out here and had a blast, because you can still keep your golf ball in front of you enough out here. It's the tricky thing out here of being wide enough that you're not losing a lot of golf balls.
Yeah.
You know, and yet being challenging enough where, you know, it's still going to be challenging if you're a low handicapper. So if you're a high handicapper, you can still come out here, have a blast, have a really good time, and just enjoy the hospitality. We heard Julia from the USGA talking about the partnership that they have with Erin Hills and just the stewards that they have here at Erin Hills. I mean, that hospitality is their number one thing. They want to make sure you're enjoying yourself, you're having a good time. Even if the golf isn't the best, you can't always control that. But the people out here at Erin Hills can control the time.
Yeah, and the USGA recognizes it, but I hope people out there appreciate the sacrifice that this property is making to make sure the U.S. Women's Open shines in a proper way next May by not opening up the course to anybody. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars that they are committing to making sure that this place looks as perfect as it can be, which is a crazy sentence, because every time I play this place, it's always in incredible conditions. I can't even imagine what this will look like with nobody on the property before the end of May when the U.S. Women's Open is here.
Well, this is one of the places that our friend Jason at Wisconsin Golf Trips will bring people to, certainly from outside of the state. His main job, taking people from outside Wisconsin, playing some of the great golf we always talk about here in Wisconsin. But he also can take you to outside of Wisconsin, places like Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, or like Scotland and Ireland. We're leaving for Scotland in a couple of weeks. Can't wait to be talking about that trip when we're over there. But he can book that for you as well. Wisconsin Golf Trips, a one-stop shop for your next golf getaway, handling all the tee times, lodging, other logistics, plus transportation, even dinner reservations. Jason and his team at Wisconsin Golf Trips can do it all. From local courses to Ireland and Scotland, make your golf trips a hole-in-one with Wisconsin Golf Trips. And Wisconsin Golf Trips presents On the Tee.
This is On the Tee with Gabe Neitzel and Stephen Watson on 94.5 ESPN.
With 18 unforgettable holes on 250 acres of natural private land, the Bog provides the ultimate golf experience. So book your next tee time by calling 262-284-7075 or visit golfthebog.com. Enjoy golf. Enjoy the Bog. Live from Erin Hills, where the USGA announced today five more USGA championships after next year's 80th playing of the U.S. Women's Open comes here to Erin Hills, meaning 10 championships, 10 USGA championships here at Erin Hills since, again, this golf course opened after the year 2000. So to get that many national championships is such an honor for everyone here at Erin Hills. We were excited to be out here today, see John Bodenheimer make the announcements, and of course, including a men's amateur coming back, the U.S. women's am coming here for the first time, along with a four-ball championship. It's a junior championship. All sorts of exciting stuff happening here at Erin Hills. But on the PGA Tour this week, it is time for the President's Cup. I feel like I want to be excited for this, Stephen, but this is one of the things that I feel is most affected by the direct split in golf. Yeah. I feel the President's Cup and the Players are probably the two PGA Tour entities that have suffered the most. The Players still certainly a prestigious tournament, but you know, you're missing a lot of the big names. And the same thing here. Yes, you wouldn't have the Europeans like John Rahm or Sergio Garcia, but you know, some of the other big, you know, international names like Joaquin Niemann would be playing in this. You know, you would be getting a Cam Smith in for the internationals here. And I really feel like this is missing those international players even more than it would miss a Brooks and Bryson on the American side.
Mainly for competitive reasons,
yes,
right?
I mean, 100%.
Team USA has just dominated this event. So it's kind of a bad position, though, for Team USA to be in, just knowing that they've won 12 of 14 of these President's Cups. They kind of have to win this one. And without
your stalwarts that have been on the Ryder Cup team, a guy like Brooks Koepka, a lot of these guys have a lot to prove. And when I look at this Team USA roster, I still feel confident that they're going to make it 13 of 15.
It's still very much better than the international team.
Yeah, the international team is just frankly weak. And there's not a lot of guys on the international team that are in great form. There's some feel-good stories with three different Canadians on there behind Mike Weir, who's the Canadian captain, and they're playing in Royal Montreal. But I frankly look at this as if USA doesn't dominate,
yeah,
it feels like a loss, because we're talking about the next wave of USA golf.
Now, I don't know if you saw the Adam Shupak piece that he had out there. He's friendly with Jim Furyk. They were exchanging text messages, and Shupak floated out the idea to Furyk, who is Team USA captain, that maybe to bring more intrigue to the President's Cup, that the international team actually has to win one, because it's been a very long time since the international team has won one. And Furyk basically told him to bleep off. So I don't know which side of this you are on, but...
Well,
at least,
I mean, we're talking about legacy for Jim Furyk,
yeah,
right? That's the wrong guy to say.
Correct.
Let's let him win one so that we start to feel like it's more of a rivalry.
Correct. And I feel like I don't get that excited. And the last time around, when it was here in the United States at Quail Hollow, the first couple of days were pretty competitive. And they do it a little differently. They just have they have five matches on day one. So two guys from each team are sitting out. I believe it's four ball on day one. Then alt shot, same thing, five matches day two. And then they pare it down and do what they do in the Ryder Cup, four matches on day three. And then you finish up with the singles matches. So there are a few more points out there to get.
Yeah, 30 total.
Yeah, and you spread it out more than what we see in the Ryder Cup. But I felt last time around 2 years ago, it was still very competitive. I don't see that this time. If this thing's competitive, I will tune in. If it's not, look, I mean, there's a lot of really good football being played on Sundays and Saturdays and a lot of other things going on where if this is not competitive, it's not going to grab my attention.
The timing is an obvious miss for the PGA Tour, who organizes the President's Cup, right? Is when you're trying to compete over a weekend with the NFL, you've already missed.
Well,
need to reschedule this at a time.
This is what I liked about the Solheim Cup, which happened a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
The Solheim Cup, you know, it is what it is on Friday and Saturday. You're going up a little bit against college football. I mean, college football's so spread out anyway. But then on Sunday, they made sure, I think their match is wrapped up by 2 p.m. Right? So, yeah, if you're a diehard NFL fan, you're probably not tuning into the Solheim Cup. But if you're someone like us who, you know, still wants to keep an eye on some of the things happening in the NFL, you can still catch the end of that early window and then still have the 3:25 games, the primetime games. They made sure they were teeing off early enough with their singles matches where they could, yes, there was a little crossover, but basically get out of the way of the NFL.
Well, luckily for them, too, it didn't get to the final few matches.
Yeah, that helped
for
too.
It to that truly matter. I mean, the crossover wasn't too dramatic there. I will say the one thing about President's Cup that I caution people when they're viewing it is don't view it as the Ryder Cup.
No.
We get an opportunity to see team match play, and that's not something we get enough in professional golf. I think it's going to be a big change. You're going to see it with TGL. But I think it's going to be something when they start to build schedules moving forward, when they think about the future of the game, that they're going to start to do more, because I think, you know, to tie it back full circle to what we're witnessing in the announcement here at Erin Hills, like, match play is so fun. And it truly is a cool viewing experience, and it's a great spectator experience as well. And I think we're going to start to see it more on the PGA Tour, not this upcoming year because they've already announced their schedule, and as Live and the PGA Tour continue to be splintered and further apart, I think that this is a path forward for how the PGA Tour can grow as more team events. So try to view the President's Cup as uniquely different from the Ryder Cup. Granted, guys are trying to set themselves up to be on future Ryder Cup teams because that is still the pinnacle of match play golf in the sport. But I think it's unique how they do President's Cup with 30 matches and
you know, the nine different foursomes and nine different four-ball events. And what's also fun, and I can't believe the Ryder Cup has not adopted this, feels like the captains have a little bit more creative power over how the matches are played. Because when you have the Ryder Cup,
it's all
you present
blind.
Your teams. And you say, here's who's going to be our A, B, C, D. And you just turn in a card, right? When they do President's Cup, it's like your fantasy football snake draft. So because the USA won in 2022, Jim Furyk is going to say, this is our first group for foursomes. Weir has an opportunity to respond, and then he gets the next choice for match two. It's kind of a fun, unique thing, and I hope the PGA Tour and golf lean into that as a spectator experience of what the draw looks like and player reaction, because I think that's a fun element of the President's Cup that we don't get in Ryder Cup.
I should probably know this, but do they still put the name in the envelope in case the tiebreaker?
That I don't know.
Okay. So this is the one vivid thing that I have from when I was, I was a junior in high school. This might have been my senior year of high school. When the Ryder Cup was being played in South Africa, and this is the only one that ended in a tie.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they... 2003. So they ended. It ended in a tie, and there is a tiebreaker, and there used to be in the President's Cup. Don't know if there is anymore. And the way that they would be settling it is each captain wrote a name in an envelope, and those two players would then play sudden death.
Oh, hell yeah. Give me that.
So Jack was the captain for Team USA. Gary Player was the captain for the international team, and it was Tiger versus Ernie. Now, it ended up being a tie overall. I think they played three or four playoff holes, and it got way too dark, and they couldn't see, and nobody really wanted to come back and play to completion the next morning. So they decided to, hey, this is going to be it. But I don't know if they do that anymore.
Well, you know my thoughts on how Solheim Cup ends in a tie, and you just retain the cup. I think that's just awful. And with 30 points out there, there is an opportunity for another tie. I would love to see the blind envelope.
I mean, well, no. So what they should do is you write down two names. You write down a name from your team and a name from the other team. The other team writes down, you know, the same. And then those are the four players who go out and play alt shot.
Oh!
That's what they should do.
That's what we're talking about, Gabe Neitzel.
That's a free idea that they can just take. I am giving that to them. That's because
that's how we should do. Like, one full day of that. Don't give me that as a tiebreaker format.
That would be, how cool would that be? I think that'd be a lot of fun.
It takes all of the strategy and the years of build-up and over-analyzing the analytics to just be like, go out there and play with this guy.
Yeah. So now...
They think you're the worst.
Yeah, right?
Go out there and
earn it. Go out there and show them.
Ah, oh, I love that.
The next best round of golf for you will happen at the Wisconsin Country Club. Make sure you do what I did. Become a member at Wisconsin Country Club. No assessments, no food and beverage minimums. Beautiful golf course that is fun, that I love. But, of course, other things as well. Maybe you're somebody that has a family, wants, you know, to play tennis or pickleball or head to the pool with themed Sunday fun days each and every week. Wisconsin Country Club has that for you as well. Check out the website, thewisconsincountryclub.com, for membership info. The Wisconsin Country Club, just a fair way away. We'll give you our Gruber Law Offices one call. That's all around the President's Cup next on the tee. Big thank you to everybody out here at Erin Hills for having us here on the tee. Stephen Watson, Gabe Neitzel, and again, Steve Peace, John Morissette, Jim Lombardo, the entire team out here at Erin Hills. Again, they are proud that they are hosting five more USGA championships here coming up soon. But we do have to make our Gruber Law Offices one call. That's all before we get out of here. Stephen, you've got a good question for us this week.
So we talked about the President's Cup. Who on Team USA is going to score the most points? Not who is going to win between USA and the internationals. Who on Team USA is going to record the most points? Last time out, it was Max Homa, who was perfect at this event. Do you think he's going to have a repeat performance?
I kind of feel it's trying to figure this out is okay, who is going to be sitting the least? You know, who's going to be playing? Obviously, everyone has their singles match. I feel like Max is a pretty good partner, even though he's not coming in with very good form. But I think I'm going to take Max Homa.
Ooh,
okay. Because I also think that Max is going to be getting, you know, whoever Scotty's playing with, presumably Sam Burns and Xander Schauffele, like when those guys get posted up there, I think Mike Weir has to counter with, you know, Hideki and Adam Scott and Tom Kien, all these guys at the top. I think that leaves Max Homa an opportunity at the bottom because I still think he's going to play enough. That's why he's on this team, because he has that record in the Presidents and Ryder Cup. I'm going with Max Homa.
Yeah, 4-0 in the 2022 Presidents Cup, 3-1-1 at the Ryder Cup. He had 30% of America's points at the Ryder Cup, but we don't need to talk about that.
Oh, ouch.
I'm going to go with the guy who, in your mind, was the PGA Player of the Year in Xander Schauffele. 6-3 record in 2019 and 2022. He was 4-3 with Patrick Cantlay. Those guys just don't lose together. Xander's going to be a part of every match. I think he has the best opportunity to score the most points for Team USA.
Should be fun to watch with the President's Cup up at Royal Montreal. Again, the sun is setting, a beautiful setting. I see some fire out there here at Erin Hills. Thank you to everybody out here at Erin Hills, and congratulations to the team for getting 5 more USGA championships. We'll be back next week. Special episode with a little feature on Tuckaway Country Club next week on the team.